Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone. Hello all, welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm Kyle Swagger, along with the three guys, back again this week for more abuse and hopefully a little bit more insight into what we are doing with our cameras. We've got Chris Forsman back with us from Ars Technica. Chris, how's your week been?
Very busy with the line release. Very busy.
With the line release. Are you mm-hmm. having compatibility Mac issues as well as... Well, I'm having a lot actually with my mixing board. What about you?
No, not really. I did run into an odd situation because I was running the Golden Master off an external drive, so I could work on some stories before the launch. And what ended up happening, and I'll have to be honest, I'm not even sure what happening, but at some point I tried to boot back into Snow Leopard so I could apply the official update, and it just wouldn't work. Like, I couldn't boot off my internal drive, so I just had to install the Golden Master right on my MacBook Air and live with it.
Now, there you go. Speaking of live with it, is that how you're feeling today, Ewan?
Yeah, I mean, we've got the same old audio issues back. It's not particularly brilliant, and we got a bit harassed. We lost Will at the last minute because his wife's not very well for the Mac show, which was a bit of a pain. But Don manfully stepped in, and he's having his own troubles today as well. He decided to do a screencast online for upgrading to Lion, and the Lion upgrades have gone really, really well. It's just the screencast hasn't, so.
It's like we're all in the lion cage, really. I mean, like I said, I think we've all. I think Alex G. Fox. Hello.
Mm-hmm. Hello, mate. How are you doing?
You're the only one that hasn't really had any problems. In fact, it's gone quite well for you with Lion.
Yeah, it hasn't really broken anything that matters, which is.
See, that's the worry.
What do you mean?
When he has a good day. And
when
yeah, if I'm not moaning, it must be.
When
bad.
Software updates go well for Alex.
Yeah,
because usually it's something with you, Alex. It's that Photoshop doesn't work or something's crap or you've had something crap out on you. But it's when you say it's too good to be true, it probably is. But right now, it actually is too good to be true for you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everyone knows I'm a moany, whingy, whiny sod, but this hasn't really caused me. And that's why I've got so many computers, just because I'm just get so sick of it. I just go and buy another one. The one I'm using here is because of Snow Leopard, or is it Leopard? Leopard to Snow Leopard caused me so many problems. I ran down to the Mac store and bought a new Mac because it was the last one they had with Leopard on it.
I think credit to Apple, generally for photographers as well included. The issues that there have been sporadic rather than consistent. I mean, last time with Snow Leopard, there was a big old string of applications that didn't function. And that's not been the case this time. A lot of compatibility seems to have been, if there's idiosyncratic things like I can't get Dropbox to work, and then loads of people say, yes, they can get Dropbox to work. And I think that's credit to Apple.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, all in all, other than a few little things, I haven't really got to play with it because I'm still trying to figure out how to get drivers to work. But other than that, everything else, actually, the install and everything went pretty, pretty well. So you guys can listen to that on a Mac podcast, which we've just recorded. This is a photography podcast, and it's all photography, and it's all photography news. And what do we have this week? We got some news. We got some good news this week, actually. Pentax is going to be in the mix again. Yep, we're going to take the kicking out of them once again. Maybe, maybe not. We shall see. We got Casio's new compact camera that we're looking at with a new touch screen, which picking up from Apple there, maybe slightly. We're going to look at some tripods, so much more. We're just going to kind of wing it out and go from there. Let's talk about this Casio touchscreen compact. Anyway, you got 720p HD video recording on it. You got a 5x optical zoom lens, a 4x digital zoom. Now, that's something I'm going to I might ask you, Ewan, why would I need both?
I would never trust the digital zoom anyway, because it's taking a pixel and blowing the pixel up instead of blowing the image up.
iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at digital optical increases in size, is actually taking the image that's received optically and zooming in on that without changing the pixelation of it. If you're talking about digital zoom, you're talking about taking the pixel and interpolating it to a bigger size. Now, in-camera interpolation's got a lot better over the years, don't get me wrong, but I still don't trust it over interpolation with Photoshop.
Right. Digital zoom is just cropping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Effectively. That might be a little bit. There is a bit of interpolation going on there. Be fair.
It feels like cropping.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time it is cropping, but you know, low end cameras crop, and that's all there is to it. The image that you got, the digital zoom is just zooming in on that. The higher end cameras will do some interpolation, but it's not. It's not very good.
I thought you were going to say low end cameras are crap.
Well, pretty much. You get what you pay for. But, I mean,
that's right.
Most low-end cameras, the key point there is exactly that. Most low-end cameras will shoot very well optically. It's when you go into the digital that they start becoming pieces of crap.
Alex, anything sensible to say about the new Casio touchscreen here? Mind you, it's the EX-SZ15.
That makes all the difference.
I actually thought the Z15 makes me want to go get it right now.
Well, I think that, yeah, that's the point. They're good at what they do, Casio. They make inexpensive, stick it in your pocket, take a relatively good picture. I think Ewan's word is it a nightclub camera or a
handbag camera? Yeah.
Handbag camera. Yeah. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, they don't pretend to be any more than that, and their place in the market is great. There's a lot of people. I mean, funny enough, a handbag nightclub camera, if you've got an illuminated back screen and you're doing everything by touch, it's probably a good idea. Because the moment you've got to start looking around in the dark to fiddle around trying to find buttons and changing various things, you've got, you know, you're running into problems. So, yeah, I think it's a natural evolution and they're going the right way with this. I mean, it's cheap, what is it? 159 euros. So,
yeah,
not a lot of money for a 14, was it 14, 15? Yeah, 14.1 megapixel, cheap as chips, put in your handbag camera. I think it's a nice, you know, it's a nice little addition to their range. But, you know, it's not anything special, but it does what it says on the tin.
I think the thing...
I was going to say, I feel like, you and I was going to say, kind of Casio always strikes me as a keyboard maker, not a camera maker.
No, well, the X-Slim range...
This feels gimmicky.
No, the XLM range has been around for a very long time. I mean, you're probably talking about a 10-year brand there. And the cameras have always shot respectably within their market bracket. So in terms of the things that are around them at a similar price and a similar spec, they've done okay. I don't think this is a bad camera by any stretch of the imagination. I think the only thing you got to think about, and it's, you know, at 26 millimeters, that's going very wide. That's great. So if you're going on holiday and you want to shoot lots of scenery and that kind of thing, shoot towns or pyramids or, you know, something that's going to be pretty big, 26 mil is fabulous to have because it means you're in everyone else's picture who's got a 28 mil lens. That 2 mil makes an enormous difference. If you then think about the optical zoom, digital zoom, the only thing you got to remember is you know at 5x optical, that's only bringing you to 90 mil, I think. And 90 mil's not good in terms of reaching out to distance. So think about buying this, what you're going to be using it for, most definitely. But if it fits the price bracket and it fits the consumers, you know, the consumer items around you, and it actually works out that it's got the right range of lens for you, then get it, because it's probably going to be a very passable camera.
I'll be, because it looks gimmicky to me. I don't know why. I mean, the touchscreen, the low price, and I just don't associate Casio with. That's just me, though. I just don't associate them with cameras. I mean, I see them, now, obviously.
This camera looks pretty straight up to me. Now, if you want to talk gimmicky, Casio had a camera at CES earlier this year that was the big sell, twofold. It had this, some sort of like fold-out, part of the case folded out, made some kind of handle so you could take pictures at strange angles, and it would apply all these kind of like Instagram style filters to everything. That was gimmicky.
Was that the one with the built-in sort of tripod stand?
It had part of the case would fold out and you could swivel the camera and you could hold this fold-out part as kind of a handle so you could, and they were showing people like on bungee cords and skydiving, taking pictures and all kinds of weird stuff. It was 110% gimmick.
Yeah, but they didn't show the pictures from the people that were on the bungee cord and everything.
Right. It was crazy.
And Alex wants it for his arsenal.
I think, you know, we're always going on about a solid camera that's not going wild on the megapixelage, that just does what it says on the tin. And from what I see here, that's what this does.
Yeah.
Well, at least the price, you're not out. I mean, it's not like you're going to go and break the wallet if you go and try this camera. I have a play with it in the shop, as we always say. And sure. I think that's the best thing to do. You know, I meant by the gimmicky part, just to kind of sum it up, is that it's touchscreen. It seems like there's a lot of touchscreen things going around, and the price point, you know. But sometimes there are good deals out there. Mm. Maybe this is one of them. Maybe so. We were mentioning tripods there just a second ago. Something we don't talk much about on the show is tripods, and we thought we'd throw one in this week. The Benro flip lock tripod has been introduced. It's a lightweight aluminum travel tripod. What is your I never hear you talk about tripods. You use tripods at all?
Oh, because
I hear
yeah.
you hanging crap from trees and everything else.
No, God, yeah, I'm Mr. Tripod. If I've got any opportunity of sticking a camera on a tripod, I'll always take it. No question. Because then I got more variability, change exposures, etc. Alex has seen
have you gotten your
my big tripod.
I've seen his big tripod as well. His wife did warn
me. That's too much information.
Too early.
Everything I do is on. Well. Yeah, everything I do work-wise is on tripod. I mean, to be honest, you know, I don't shoot things that move around, so it's pointless. You know, it takes a whole problem out of photography if you've got the camera still. You know, half the problem people have with tripods, or sorry, not with photography, is, you know, movement. Well, as soon as you stick something on a tripod, I use Gitzo. I don't know. The tripods are about £800. The heads are probably £400. You know, but I mean, I walk around with a. Well, I don't really walk around. I stagger around with a tripod that it's designed to take my 10.8s, my 5.4s, and for the most part, I'm sticking a 35mm DSLR on the back. So it's massively overkill. But I don't want to carry around two or three tripods just for the sake of. You know, having one big heavy one. The Benro make some really nice tripods, and they also make, they're cheap, and they also make some quite clever gadgety tripods. You know, tripods these days aren't just literally three legs and a spindle that goes up the top. You know, that central spindle can twist, it can turn, it can do quite clever things. I mean, you can now get tripods that, because you can reverse and you can spin around the head, your camera can be on ground level. But attached to a tripod. And there's a number of times I've needed to do stuff like that. So, you know, tripods aren't just, I mean, they've got a monopod here as well, but tripods aren't just, you know, sticking 2 foot to 8 foot above the ground and taking a picture. There's a lot of functionality if you get a good movable and adjustable tripod. There's an awful lot of photographic techniques that you can do if you own one.
And you just said 800 pounds for a tripod.
Yeah. 800.
I mean, okay, this takes me to a new realm, because we've never talked really about tripods on here. We've talked about cameras. We've talked about the highest, the lowest of the lowest. I'm sitting here going, what and why?
You're not the only one, dude. I'm sitting there going, what?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you got a piece of 10x8 film, okay? Now, even with my discounts and multi-buying thing, each sheet of film probably cost me £10-15. My cameras and the lenses, they cost me a fortune. I need the tiniest bit of wobble, the tiniest bit of shake anywhere on there, and I can't sell that picture. I can't sell that piece of film. You need something that's very, very solid. It's got some sort of hydraulic fluid in it, so if the floor vibrates ever so slightly, the camera won't show it. There's an awful lot of things that, you know, you don't realize when you're taking things. I take my exposures about 4 seconds. An awful lot can go wrong in 4 seconds movement wise. So I need something that's going to basically stay as rigid as, you know, nailing it to a piece of concrete.
You need a gimbal,
they're even heavier.
I had no idea I had the mechanics of a car in a tripod. I mean, I'm looking. I have a tripod right back over. You can't see it. It's off camera. It costs me $20.
Yeah, and probably does it just fine. I mean, that's the key point. I mean, if you're going to buy a tripod, there's basic things to look for. First thing is, what are you going to do with it? Because if you're talking about 4 second film exposures, that is not typical of 95%, maybe even 99% of photographers. So, you know, Alex has got a very specialist use case there for it, which justifies it, and which is fine. This monopod, you know, at £67 for an aluminium monopod. Yeah. There's basic things to check with monopods. You know, whenever you compress something, whenever you put something down and put weight on it, it has a deflection. And the deflection is it bows or curves one way or the other. Check out how much this deflects before you think about buying it. I've got one that I know doesn't deflect, but it's an aluminium tripod. It cost me only £54, monopod rather, and it works just great. The other thing is I've got a very heavy tripod that doesn't move very much at all, but it doesn't do the same kind of things that Alex did, and it cost me £100. With a £160 ball head on it, you know, it's you've got to look at the amount of stability that you want, how much you're going to be carrying the thing around. I mean, Alex has seen my tripod. If you were going to go out shooting landscapes for the day, the last thing you'd want strapped to your back is my tripod. But then my tripod goes up to 8 feet, so
that's why you strap things in trees.
Yeah.
Chris, what kind of tripod did you use? I almost said iPod. Tripod, do you use?
Honestly, I've got a what is it, Manfrotto? I've got one of the older Manfrotto. Like, they had a kind of a budget tripod they made some years ago, and I've had it for maybe 10 years at least. And to be quite honest, I don't use it that much for the kind of work that I do. You know, the main thing that I shoot is live band photography, so there isn't really much room for a tripod when you're stuck with a bunch of kids moshing on your head while you're trying to shoot a band on stage. So, but it's just a solid aluminum. It was fairly Manfrotto's sort of kind of generally considered maybe like a premium brand. They usually carry a pretty good name, and so the prices tend to be a little bit higher. So it's more well made than your typical $25, $35, $40 inexpensive tripods, but it's about the same setup. So you've got a cast aluminum pan head and aluminum legs, and you know, you can adjust it various different ways. So
there's a whole realm. I mean, basically, I'm learning so much today. There's a whole realm of tripods out there. Now, if you're like me, you went and you bought, you think, wow, I picked a great tripod up for $20. But then if you're like the very pro side, that you need the absolute, by God, if a leaf moves, it's not going to affect my photo. That's Alex's in. And then there is a middle somewhere. Mm-hmm. Where's a good middle range? I'm a prosumer. I'm loving I'm loving to take pictures. I want to get a tripod. Where's the middle?
I've got to go back to what you just said. You know, I will always come back and say that there is a use case in everything with photography as to what you want it for and how much you're willing to spend and how much you can afford and what the return's going to be on it. I buy stuff commercially, so I want things that I know are going to impact my business and give me something back in return. But I've gone out in the past, forgotten my tripod, ended up running down to the local Argos, which is just like a little cheap retail place here in the UK. It's cost me £20 to get one that's stuck behind there that's crappy. I've gone out and shot with that for the day, and I've kept it and used it because it's fairly light. It's aluminium. It's not that bad at all. And I've had one that I got from Argos that's actually, I've still got upstairs in the loft, and I still use. It's bloody good.
So it's more about just what you can afford and what you want to buy, really, at the end of the day.
I've got a monopod and I've got a tripod as well, and I use them both distinctly and both separately. I rarely carry the both of them together because there's never that case. There's a thing here that they talk about dropping off one of the legs on the tripod to make it into a monopod. That's a waste of time. If you've got a tripod, just let the front leg down and you've got a monopod. Don't get caught up in the bull.
That's the cheapest solution.
With tripods and monopods, don't get caught up in the bull. Look at what you've got. Look at the price that you've got. Get hold of one and wobble it around on the floor and then see what it gives you. And most of the places, if you go to Calumet and places like that, even Jessup's, you know, they'll let you have a play with it. They won't let you just say no. You get what you box and then you can bring it back or not bring it back. It's up to you.
Yeah.
Well, moving on now. Educational. Thanks, guys. Makes me feel Makes me feel like I gotta go buy a better tripod. Yeah. But moving on. Something that caught my eye this week is the Panasonic Lumix DMC FZ48. The UK launch date actually was announced. It's coming out in October. 12.1 megapixels on this thing. It's got a heck of a lens on it. I guess, what, 24 times optical zoom? Beautiful camera. I mean, but this lens just is shockingly, I'm going to say long. It's there. It's long, yeah. I don't know how to put it. I mean, I'm seeing it's like, where the hell's the camera? Because all I see, are they trying to focus on the lens or?
Oh, focus on the lens. That's a good one.
Ba-dum-bum.
Please take over, Alex.
Okay. You know what? I mean, Lumix, they make some nice compact cameras. And this is the natural progression upwards. I don't know. I couldn't tell you if, you know, until I've used one of these. But if you looked at the quality you get for a fairly inexpensive compact camera, and if you think if they've scaled up this technology and they've put a decent lens on it, 24 optical zoom. I don't know what the equivalent is. I mean, it probably says here 26 to 130. You know, that's not a bad camera, not a bad. It's 2.8, it's 12 million pixels, so we're not getting, you know, extravagant and being silly about it. There's a lot to be, you know, quite impressed about. You know, in fact,
there's a hell of a lot of lens there, that's for sure.
Well, that's the one you're talking about there is the compact at 26 to 130.
The lens is probably even bigger.
The FZ48 has got equivalent 25 to 600.
600? Yeah. You know what? If you wanted a single camera, you know, no messing about, one lens, go out, take good pictures, 2.8. I mean, if you think about it, a 2.8, something that was a 25 to 600 equivalent, what you're talking about, if you could get one,
you're talking but you about, can't.
£800, £900.
Well, they're not out yet, but yeah.
But you know, you're getting this lens attached to you're getting a free camera with this lens by the pricing. Do you know what? I wouldn't mind having a go with this.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Here's another one for the collection.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it and thinking, this is a take on holiday and take proper shots camera without having to carry all the rubbish with you.
You're as bad as me as buying vinyl records. You just see it and you think, well, I know I already have this, but this copy looks better. It's in better shape. I bet it doesn't have any crackles in it. I'm going to buy it. Is that how you are with cameras, Alex? There's no scratch in the lens.
Yeah, I'm going to take it. Yeah, let's not beat around the bush. Yes, I am.
Oh, the precious. Oh.
Well, I love the looks of this camera. And if that's what you're telling me by a go out, all you've got, it's like you've got a bunch of power in one camera. What's funny about this is because the one you were talking about just a second ago, Alex, is the DCML S5. That's a 14.1 megapixel. The lens obviously is nothing like this, but yet this one's a 12.1 megapixel.
I've worked out what the G is for in Alex G Fox. It's Gollum.
No, yeah, that's it. Oh no, that's it. I'm gonna have to change my name.
Ewan's Kung Fu Panda impersonation. This kind of goes over to you, Chris. So the Mr. 12 pixels is enough. I mean,
to address your actual question.
Yeah.
No, it's yeah. I agree. They're really 14 megapixels is, I personally feel like, kind of ridiculous in a snapshot camera. In fact, the last snapshot camera I bought, which effectively got replaced by my iPhone 4, was something like 8 megapixels, and I set it to 2, like the day I bought it. I just set it to 2 megapixels and never shot pictures over that resolution. I just never had any need for a snapshot to be more than 2 megapixels. My personal feeling in particular is that 14 for a snapshot camera is just... It's overkill.
It's overkill.
I'm trying to imagine someone even if they use it as a handbag camera and take it around to bars or clubs and shoot pictures of their friends, when are they ever going to make, you know, a 20 by 30 print off of it? Mm. Never. It's never going to happen. I think that, well, to look at the technical specifications, Panasonic's using a CCD in here, which tend to, in some cases, not have the same kind of low light performance that CMOS sensors do. So it's actually a benefit to this camera to have a little bit less megapixels and instead, you know, use larger sensor sites that can gather more light.
It does actually, it makes sense to me. If it makes sense to me, then that's, you're doing well. the thing, what I see about this camera though, to see the FZ48, and then I'm looking down here and I'm seeing the DCML S5. If you're going to put those on a shelf to me, all right, I know which one I'm going to get. I'm going to get the FZ48, but how many people out there say, well, you know, well, that FZ48's only got 12 and this other one's got 14. How many people do you think, Ewan, I mean, you would probably be a standard. How many people do you think would actually go for the 14 over the huge lens?
There's still quite a few out there, but there's less now, thanks to people actually bothering to listen to people like us. you know, and a lot more articles are being written, which is sensible about saying, you know, you don't, 14 megapixels in a phone, don't expect more than 6 megapixels in a proper compact. So there's less out there. I like the FZ48. I think it looks really good. It's not a bridge camera in the true sense, so I don't not get it like I normally do. But the thing that interested me was on the front of it, there are two ring adapters. If you look very carefully, there's a lens adapter on there to start with. So if you're fitting a lens adapter, that means there are other things coming on the front of this, and one of them that's on there is a close-up lens, so for macro and stuff. So this could be quite interesting. If you're looking at someone who's at the lower end, not looking to get into prosumer, just wants a decent camera that can do some good stuff at home, good stuff for the holiday, maybe take it to an event or two and still get some nice snaps, if there's a couple of little add-ons that are only ring adapters, this could be quite versatile for your kind of low-end budding amateur. The price is the key then, though, because if they come out with this thing at $1,000, you know, shove it. I ain't interested.
Nope.
You're talking out your backside.
Exactly. And I hope we actually do find out. They said it's coming out in October, so we're a couple of months away from finding out about the thing. But if the price is good, count me in, because this thing looks like, to me, for the prosumer out there, says, I want to get into a really good camera that I could do a lot with. Plus, by what you just pointed out, you, and having the option with possible expandability on the thing.
Mm-hmm. What's the price point then? What are we saying that the, you know, what's, because there's no price on the story. What's our interpretation of the price point of this camera?
It's got to be $599.
Okay.
Is that dollars?
Dollars. $600.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
I mean, we're talking UK prices. So, yeah, I would expect this to come in about UK £600.
No.
I do.
I wouldn't buy it at £600.
I think that's what they'll charge for it
now. Yeah, but you look at that, you add another 200, you get in the Samsung.
Are we starting another BagelTech bet again?
No. I think if this thing really wants to sell like hotcakes, $499 and £350, you'd make a great deal. But I'd see $600 for this is probably about right. £450 in the UK stores to £500. Anything over £500, it's not going to sell.
I'm seeing the FZ47 coming in at $399 US.
Yeah, see? Thank you.
Now that? Yeah.
Let's not count our chickens, Ewan.
Just count the eggs.
$500, there we go. I said it.
I hope you're right, because I
don't see any reason to not get it at that price.
You don't,
honestly. I mean, if this.
Say again, Chris.
$400 camera?
Yeah, I don't see any reason to not get it at that price. Mm. I mean, you're getting a Leica design lens. You're getting a decent 12 megapixel CCD. They can shoot 1080i HD if you want.
Mm.
You're getting a crazy amount of zoom.
I think it's good. I think that would sell like hotcakes at under $500.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Agreed. If it's $400, this is my Christmas present.
You're getting your Christmas present this week, mate. You've already bought a Mac Mini. Don't push your luck, dude.
Christmas in July.
Not only has the wife let you buy a new Mac Mini, mate, she's let you cast off her old one onto her as well. So I think pushing a camera is going to be...
That's an upgrade for her. She's using a Windows machine right now.
You may not be here next week.
I won't be here.
She won't let you out to play.
I may not be here in this room, but I'll be here.
You'll be in the local motel. On 1 megabit a second, if that.
So I think we're all in agreement on this camera. This, if it's $400, by all means, it's definitely worth the money. All in agreement?
Yeah, I think it's good at five.
Even at five.
Yeah,
now, even at Alex five. Would buy it at £800.
Yeah, exactly. Fooling his money and all that.
Steal at twice the price.
Understanding.
Alex will be looking for a sofa at your house next week.
I've already done that.
Welcome. More than welcome, mate. You see his DIY. Oh, what a man.
Yeah, the door's still on.
I got if you're short for work this week, mate, Sharon's away. I got a ton of work needs doing.
Shall we end things on a light note, guys, before we get into the questions this week from our fine folks over at Pentax?
Sorry. It's just the word Pentax sets me off. Stop it.
The Pentax UK, it speaks out on the Ricoh cell. We all knew this was kind of, well, we all knew it was coming. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago, actually. The merge with Ricoh, they said their plans are to create a €1 billion brand within 3 years. Possible? With Pentax?
But yeah, I mean, I'm going to create a $1 billion brand in the next 25 minutes. I mean, it's easy enough to do that when you actually don't say anything. I mean, if you read
you sound like an infomercial.
If you read the story on Tech Radar, there's a lot of things about we're very happy. This is good for us moving forwards. This is the business that we want. We want €1 billion in the next 12 months. There's bloody, bloody, blah. But there's no substance. There's no. It doesn't even say we're going to get $1 billion by selling more cameras.
No, that's,
there's nothing exactly in there about right. A roadmap. It's just follow the yellow brick road. But there's no bricks.
Pentax press release.
Wait, it's 500 words of absolutely nothing in terms of content.
Right. It's a strange approach because I mean, it was weird enough when Hoya bought Pentax, but when you think about it, it makes sense. I mean, Hoya is a major producer of glass. Pentax, a major producer of glass. There was definitely some room there for, I guess if you want to use a stupid business term, synergy. But, you know, there's some crossover there.
There was more vision and concepting in the right. Airhead discussion that the three of us had the last time it came out with zero information at our disposal than there is in that frigging press release.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's just clicks and buzzes. It's just clicks and buzzes.
But the question is, out of all of this, Pentax, Ricoh, team up. Alex, will you buy it?
$6 billion lying around for it? Yeah, the Fox takeover of Pentax Ricoh.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I would take that right now, honestly, because at least Alex would probably know what the hell to do with the cameras over there.
But what's really surprised me is how little Ricoh have paid for.
$77 million
is business terms. It's pocket money.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I don't know, maybe they had £77 million worth of debt and the agreement was to pay off the debt.
I mean,
That's very likely.
There's no, not only is there no substance in the story, there's no substance in the amount of money they've paid for it. So are they just, it's just a branding exercise. Maybe they're just going to have two different versions of Ricoh cameras, one saying Pentax, one saying Ricoh, and that's about it. But again, Pentax, their top of the range medium format cameras have got to be worth more than $77 million. So there's something in this I don't get.
Yeah, I think I mean, we were talking about patents last time, Chris. You mentioned that. I don't think there's a lot of patents on offer here, and that's probably the problem. Is that Pentax are maybe struggling, and the bricks and mortar is not worth anything anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So could be a sad tale.
I think it's just weird because Ricoh kind of has its own thing that it's doing with the GXRs. How's the Pentax Q going to fit in there? Because it's just now being released. You know, what are they? Are they going to do? Are they going to make the separate Ricoh cameras and make Pentax separate? I mean, you know, they were saying that Pentax is going to run as a kind of an independent subsidiary for the time being, but you know that only makes sense for so long. That only makes sense for so long.
Wouldn't it make sense? I mean, to me, we all give Pentax the crap all the time. Don't you think by actually bringing Pentax to a bit more mainstream, even more upper scale pro market, that they need to attach that name Ricoh to them, that they need to somehow put that within their advertising, saying you want to buy this camera because we sold ourselves for $77 million.
But when has Ricoh ever had a bigger name in photography than Pentax?
Oh, 70s.
But I disagree.
60s and 70s. 60s and 70s was all Ricoh. Ricoh was there was them, and who were the other ones that you don't get anything anymore? Rollei.
Oh, yeah.
Suave.
Yeah.
Ricoh and Rollei were the 60s and 70s. They made the compacts, 35 mils, that took little tiny rolls of film, and they gave you incredible quality images. They were significantly better than an awful lot of the other small cameras that are around there. My dad's got a small Rollei, and you will not. It takes 35mm film, and it takes the best pictures I've ever seen in my entire life.
I've got a Rollei 35B. That
exactly.
It's funny because awesome the pictures, only digital and that was the they really did was medium format. So it's the same thing, right? Isn't it?
Mm.
But even in the 70s, Ricoh built SLRs that were largely, well, first of all, they licensed the Pentax came out.
Ricoh were all about Pentax industrial imaging, though, as well. But they weren't much of a consumer brand market for cameras, but the ones that they made were frigging good. But they made an awful lot over industrial imaging.
Mm-hmm.
So is the team up beneficial? Well. I mean, is this going to help out Pentax? Obviously, it's not for Ricoh's benefit. I don't see it that way. Does this help Pentax yet again try to push the market of the Nikon market, the Canon market, hell, even the Panasonic market?
Well, I think, I really do. The only reason you could, I mean, they're talking about, you know, European business. Well, forget about European business. I think the only reason you could be doing this is to try and create a sort of conglomerate of photographic companies that you can try and take into Asia and China. I think this is the only way you can do it. I mean, you can't, you know, Pentax can't really go in there. I mean, people have heard of them, but if you just bring together two names and put them in one place and then go hell for leather for China and India, for instance, you can create a billion-dollar company very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I there must be a strategy, and I don't think the strategy is anything to do with the US or Europe. I can't believe it is.
I think this is 90% industrial imaging, 10% front-end cameras for the consumer.
Well, here's the thing that's strange. The Pentax didn't sell any of their industrial imaging stuff. That's all staying Pentax.
Oh, right, okay. Well, that's nothing to do with anything. It's 0%.
Yeah, proved you wrong, Reagan.
I didn't read that bit.
It will be interesting, guys, to see how this develops, because it is an interesting team up, but who benefits more from it? I'm saying Pentax, obviously, in the end. Questions time, guys. Shall we get into them?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, let's do.
We got three this week. First one's from Frank from Cambridge, Massachusetts. So Frank, sorry about the accent there. Hey guys, thanks for answering my question a few weeks back, and sorry, but I have another. It's okay, Frank, keep sending them in. My wife wants me to shoot some pictures of the homemade dolls she makes and sells. I've tried to set up a lighting rig with a white backdrop to be able to cut out the dolls for advertising, but they always have a heavy shadow under them, which then looks unnatural. I've got good images laying them flat and shooting them above the lights from the side, but can't get a decent image with them seated. And somebody just fell off their seated chair. Any ideas? Any ideas, guys?
I think I have. Who I think I can make this. Answer this question also with a cheap thingy.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, cool. Go ahead, Chris. Two for the price of one.
Yeah, it's very, very easy to make a homemade light box. Just get a big cardboard box, the biggest you have handy. You cut out the sides and leave just a little, you sort of make a little frame on the left, the right, and the top. And cover that with any kind of translucent material. You can use tissue paper, a thin fabric, anything you can get handy if you have it around the house, or you can go, you know, a supply store and pick it up as cheap as you can. Cover that. And then you can use any kind of white You can get some backdrop paper at a camera store. You could use a large poster board. And then you can set that in the background and make sort of like a small little sweep. And, you know, you can set that by a really bright window, and you'll have a lot of lighting all around, a lot of even diffuse lighting all around that should reduce those shadows.
I think, Alex, we had a similar question of this a while back. Similar things. I believe it was you that kind of came up with a similar idea.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the trouble he's having is using a direct light source. What Chris is saying is completely correct. Create some sort of softbox tent, and then you're going to have very, very subtle shadows. You can get to the point of having no shadows at all, but then if you're going to do that, you may as well just cut it out completely. But that's where the issue is. I mean, when you're shooting from above, I dare say you're having the lights very, very close to the camera, and therefore you're not getting too much shadow. But, you know, to do it properly, you really need, exactly as Chris said, you need to build a softbox tent sort of construction, and you won't have any problems at all. You'll get a lovely, soft, subtle shadow all around it, and you won't need to cut them out. You'll use the background as the background. It will look fine.
Sweet. Anything to add, Ewan?
Yeah, I mean, I think the point that the guys have made is exactly right. You know, when you shoot a model against an infinity curve, the beauty you've got is that you can pull the model forwards and light the backdrop separately without the lights that are lighting the backdrop affecting your exposure on your model. So that's why they've got this kind of almost floaty effect that they look like they're not touching anything at all. You lack that when you do small product photography. And as Alex says, get yourself a product tent that's lit from the back and lit from underneath as well, and that'll solve a lot of your problems. They're dirt cheap on eBay. You're talking about $25 perhaps to get one that pops up to maybe 4 foot square, nearly, you know, over a meter. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing you can do as well is get yourself a piece of Perspex and just sit it at an angle with a tissue paper over the front, and again light it from the back with a black mask around it to stop the extra glare. That kind of stuff works really easy as well. It's again very quick and very cheap. It's lighting the background is his problem. He needs to light the background, and with Kearney products, you can't get lights behind the products. That's the trouble.
Do you have a quick thing to add there, Chris, before we move on?
Oh, I just dug up a quick link to a tutorial, like, to, if you want to make your own home, homemade light box like that.
Cool.
It's digital-photography-school.com /how-2-make-a-inexpensive-light-tent. If you didn't get that, that's what the rewind button is for on your MP3 player. Next question, guys. Thanks for that link, Chris. That is helpful. I'm looking at it right now. And next question comes from Stuart from Essex. He says, hi, fellas. Thank you very much. If you get time to answer my question, obviously, we've got the time. I recently took a nice picture of my whole family, and my father and mother won a large canvas for their wall. I've done smaller canvases before and had good results from the studio I used online. But for this one, I was wondering if I was better off giving them the original image and letting them upscale it using Photoshop Elements to provide them a correctly sized JPEG. Who wants to handle this one? Alex, you do a lot of canvas.
Yeah, upscale. I mean, to be honest, I don't know what you shot it in. Hopefully not in JPEG. if you want anything that
raw.
What I'd say is, if you've got a reputable company and you know you can trust them, and you know they know what they're doing, send them your original. Don't try and be clever and crop and, you know, resize yourself. Because if you're going to, you know, if you're going to resize it in Photoshop Elements, they're going to use something like Genuine Fractals, and they're going to get a lot better result than you. And also remembering, when you print on canvas, it tends to only be about, 220 dpi, and you're going to play around about 300 dpi. So you're going to lose a percentage there. I would just, if you can communicate with them first of all and let them know exactly what you want. But, you know, again, when you're doing it on canvas, you need to know slightly different sharpening, and you need to basically know the weave of the canvas and things like that, which, you know, you're not going to know. And even if they pass on the information, it's probably not going to make an awful lot of sense to you. So I would speak to them first of all and send them your original, and let them, they'll know what the best result they can get from is, rather than you playing around with it yourself.
Let the pros handle it.
I would say as well, if you're looking for canvases, the thing to look at for quality of the what your product is that you're going to get back is to almost forget about the canvas and ask them about what the stretching is. Because if the stretching is coming back on MDF, then don't touch them with a barge pole, because you can probably guarantee that your imaging is going to be equally crappy. Get someone that stretches on decent spruce or something like that, you know, a decent quality material that's not going to warp and bend afterwards, seasoned woods, and ask them more about that, because that's the bigger part rather than just looking at the price or the image itself. And I agree with Alex. You know, if you get someone who says, no, we stretch on regenerated spruce or something like that, just give them the money, let them do it. Don't screw around yourself, because you'll only make you'll make more damage than they will. They've got liability cover for that kind of stuff. You haven't.
Sweet deal. Chris, you a canvas man?
I've got a friend who has a studio, professional studio, and he does a lot of canvases. Like he primarily shoots weddings, but he does a lot of canvases. And I guess the only thing to add is, beyond, you know, trust the experts, is that you'd be surprised how little resolution you need to get a decent looking canvas. Mm. You know, Alex was talking about how the texture of the canvas affects how it looks and everything. But once you get it up on the wall and aren't staring at it from 2 inches away, you know, you can get a pretty impressive looking canvas even with a so-so quality image. So
yeah, funny enough, canvas gives you got more leeway on canvas than you do on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, again, that's one of the reasons canvases became popular as well, because you could make what do you say, a purse out of a sow's ear sometimes with canvas.
You could cover up the mistakes. A lot of
problems.
Yeah, you can cover up the mistakes. Yeah. All right, guys. Last question comes from Peter, and he says, "Dear Kyle, Alex, Ewan, and Chris, I have a quick question. This week, I was talking with a friend who is also an amateur photographer, and we were discussing whether it's a good idea to buy a lens hood for lenses without them, or whether it was a waste of money. I know that some are pretty cheap on eBay, but I wanted to know what you would suggest. If yes, it is really necessary." Ewan, is it necessary?
I use hoods more in studios than anywhere else, to be honest. I mean, you look at lens hoods and you think they're about outside photography with sun and so on, but I'd use a hood in a studio environment where I'd got like a snoot or something like that was lighting someone's hair, and I didn't want to get any glare off that because it's out of shot. It's that kind of stuff where you've got forward facing light that's coming towards a lens. You could end up getting a refraction or lens flare-y flare type effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of thing. So more often than not, shooting into a sun, yeah, I'd say use it, or shooting with sun oblique angles towards the forward facing position of your camera, then I'd say yeah, use one. They are cheap, they're dirt cheap, and you get ones, you know, that you can say, right, you know, I've got a 75mm lens screw thread, so you can get a 75mm with a flap around rubber hood, and some of them are absolutely excellent quality, and they're £6 or something like that from China, come within 2 days.
Are these just like things that are like, they look like a half a tint, they're usually black?
Just hood the lens. It's just, the idea is just to stop loose light from the front going in and causing flaring effects across your lens. So, but I would say, like I say, I very rarely use them outside. I'd use them in studios more than anything else.
Yeah, the time I find that they can be useful is if I'm shooting digital. I find in studios, depending on the lighting setup, again, I find that sometimes I lose a bit of contrast if I haven't got a lens hood on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just light. Certain times, certain shots I take, I think, you know what, if I put a lens hood on there, I'll get more contrast, and inevitably I do. So for the price, use one. One of the nice things about lens hoods, they're designed so when you put them away, they slip over the top of your lens in reverse. So to carry them around doesn't take up any more room than carrying around your lens in the first place. So it's worth having a couple in there, because on the odd chance you want to use it. And also sometimes when you're somewhere, it makes you look a bit more impressive. It makes you look like you've got a bigger lens.
It's a penis extension.
Yeah, and people think right. He must be a professional. He's got one of them things that no one knows what they're for on the front of his camera.
It only cost me £6 too to look a little bit more manly.
You had me.
It's really true though. People, you have a... SLR with a lens hood on it and maybe even a flash, and people will take you way more seriously. It's true. It's totally true.
I built an entire frigging career on it.
I believe
he's got an iPhone 4 with a lens
with a lens hood on it.
That's right. That'll be the next accessory you want. We've already got the little lens extender. Look for the lens hood. If you guys want to get your question in, Bagel Tech Photos, you can see we do them every week. We'd love to get yours, and thanks for sending those in, guys. BagelTechPhoto@gmail.com is the place to do it. We will get to your question. We do get a lot of them, so if we're not getting to them as fast as you like, we apologize. We get a lot coming in each and every week, but keep them coming because we will eventually get there. Before we wrap up this week's show, we got to give a shout out to our lovely friends over there, UK2.net. Keeping the Bagel Tech Network, the Bagel Tech Empire, as Ewan would like to say sometimes, alive. And they are still offering a great, great deal. But you got to go to bageltechnews.com. You got to use that click through. That way they know we have sent you. And when you get over there, VPS server, web hosting, anything that you want on their site, Bagel Tech, use that code, because we found out people are not using the code at checkout. Bagel Tech is the code on anything that you've got there, 15% off your order. And Ewan, you were telling me, I couldn't believe that people are not using the code. They're getting there, they're using their click through, and then they're forgetting to use the code.
The click through on the website basically is a tracking click through. So it doesn't know who you are, it doesn't know your IP address. It just knows that you are going from Bagel Tech to shop around. And then wherever you go in UK2 site, they know that you've come from Bagel Tech. So when you then check out, they also know that you haven't put your bloody code in and got your discount. And we had a call from them 2 weeks ago saying, can you just let everyone know that they're not using the offer code? You know, they're desperate to give away the service effectively at 15%. Off, and we've had the same call again this week. And one of the things that's really embarrassing is that last night we were doing the big show, and I was talking to James because he's just switched his domains and stuff over to UK2, and he stopped and went, "I didn't use the code," and he's one of our bloody presenters. So I mean,
exactly. So we're telling you, don't be as dumb as our presenters. Use the code. Use the code. Bagel Tech is the code. 15% off anything that you get over there at uk2.net, we'd be lost without them.
The thing to say is as well that the listeners have been really kind, because one of the things that UK2 have said is that you guys are buying stuff through us in droves. They are extremely happy with their sponsorship of the podcast. They want it to continue, and you're the guys that are making it worthwhile, so thank you very much.
Yes, yeah, without you, I mean, we always say without uk2.net we couldn't do this, and we couldn't, but the reason why we do it is because of you guys that tune in each and every week to the live, into the chat room, and of course downloading the podcast each and every week. So thank you to everyone that's listening to all the shows on the Bagel Tech Network. Of course, we're going to do this again next week. We'll be back, but before we do, we got to tell you where to get a hold of everybody. So we'll do the little rounds now. Chris, where can people get a hold of you?
Well, I write for Ars Technica, and so you can read most of my tech-based writing, usually about Apple, but I cover a lot of tech policy and other things. It's arstechnica.com, and I am on Twitter most of the day at FORESMAC, Foresmac.
And I follow your tweets. I was following you this week when you were... had him coming like every 30 seconds.
all shades of lion tips.
Those were late night tweets, I could tell. Because the sun was shining over here, that's why. Ewan, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, or at Bagel Tech News on Twitter, and commercial website for photography is ewanrankin.co.uk.
Oh, sweet, sweet deal. And last but certainly not least, other than the Wall Street Journal, where can we get a hold of you, Alex?
Wormwood Scrubs.
Yeah, the share index, FT. You can get me at whatever it's called, Alex G. Fox on Twitter thing, and you can get me at alexgfox@twitterything.com as well.
Which we're still working out a use for.
Yeah, we're going to figure out why I bought it one day.
We've got to do something with that, Alex, because twitterything.com is the next rave. You know it is.
It is.
Yeah, it's got to be something, isn't it? I might donate it to Bagel Tech.
If plans go according to plan, then next week, me and Mr. Green will be presenting you with something to post.
That could be good and bad.
Oh, it's going to be bad. It's going to be really bad.
It's going to be obscene by the probability.
No, just offensive.
Oh, that's not bad. As long as it's in my name, that'll be okay, eh?
Well, everybody can tune in to all the offensive stuff coming at you next week here on the Bagel Tech Network. Don't forget Bagel Tech Mac. Check out that podcast. Bagel Tech Big Show. Of course, the daily show with Ewan three times a week. So we've got you all covered here. All tech news. It's all coming at you. We'll be back with a photo show next week. We hope to see you. And thank you so much for tuning in. Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.